Okay, so I actually wanted to introduce the topic of my talk with a tweet. Ooh. My dream job is not working, no work. I don't dream about labor. I'm sure many of you have seen this image before. It's quite a popular meme, and I think there's a reason why this tweet went semi-viral and struck a chord with so many people. It embodies and expresses the feeling of alienation that dominates our lives. That the experience of work and life generally is oppressive, meaningless, and unfulfilling. And this idea that life, in the words of Hobbes, is nasty, brutish, and short is largely accepted as fact, that alienation and misery are an inevitable condition of human existence. But as a Marxist, I think we should reject this formulation. What makes our jobs and lives so burdensome and unrewarding is not the intrinsic nature of work itself, but the character work takes on under capitalism. People seek out ways to labor and create in a variety of ways that are fun and fulfilling. But under capitalism, our working lives are controlled in the strictest ways possible. We have no agency or control over a large, important part of our daily lives. And Karl Marx dedicated a large part of his early work in examining this phenomenon of alienation in capitalism. He wrote in his economic and philosophical manuscripts of 1844 that in his work, he, the worker, does not affirm himself, but denies himself, does not feel content, but unhappy, does not develop freely his physical and mental energy, but mortifies his body and ruins his mind. As soon as no physical or other compulsion exists, labor is shunned like the plague. So, why is the alienation that Karl Marx describes here still relevant 200 years on, despite a massive transformation of the working conditions from the factories of the Industrial Revolution prevalent during Marx's time, to the so-called pristine offices of the modern working class in the West? And what does alienation itself actually tell us about capitalism? And so, these are the themes I want to draw out during this talk. Starting with how alienation manifests here in the 21st century, then moving on to Marx's own analysis of alienation within capitalism, and ending with how you actually overcome it. I think, firstly, the concept of alienation gives explanation and expression for why we feel so shit all the time under capitalism. Jimmy Reed, a trade unionist in Britain, described alienation as the feeling of despair and hopelessness that pervades people who feel with justification that they have no real say in shaping or determining their own destinies. And I think if you ask around, this sentiment is super commonplace. People feel a sense of detachment and helplessness when they think about their own lives and future. We see ourselves as, simply powerless, our lives subject to the whims of the economy and the decisions of politicians. And this feeling is particularly acute among young people. So a recent study of Australian youth conducted by researchers at Monash University compiled a bunch of issues that young people were concerned about. Overwhelmingly, young Australians were worried about their financial security and future, and also the threat posed by climate change. 53 participants felt that they were less better off than their parents, and many expressed concern over the prospect of buying their own home. One participant said, "I feel like, as a young person specifically, we get the raw deal out of almost everything at the moment, and there's not a lot of not a lot for us to cling on to that's looking good." But the study also emphasized that these concerns aren't just limited to young people. They're felt broadly across the general population. And so alienation also impacts how we participate within society. Labor politician Andrew Leigh, he has a really useful resource that catalogues what he describes as declining social capital in Australia. That is the networks of trust and reciprocity that link multiple individuals together. Leigh argues that Australians are less likely to do volunteer work, to be part of an organisation of some sort. In fact, there are less organisations to even be a part of. Less Australians attend church. We have less friends than 50 years ago, and we're playing less organised sport. And research indicates that 45% of Australians will experience a mental illness of some kind in their lifetime. People today are spending more of their free time on social media, yet we are more lonely than ever. From 2010 to 2018, a study found that our social connectedness had decreased by 10%. And one in five Australians say they don't have someone they can regularly turn or talk to. And people deal with alienation in various ways. As I was saying before, people are spending increasingly more time online and turning inwards. In Japan, one extreme form of dealing with alienation is the phenomenon of hikikomori, where an estimated 500,000 people, the overwhelming majority being young men, have withdrawn entirely from social and public life. But people can also turn to things like smoking, alcohol, drugs, gambling, and even crime to cope with the oppression and pressures of capitalism. So I think it's pretty clear that, you know, capitalism makes us feel shit. It's a shit system. It makes us depressed, unsatisfied, and pushes us into habits and behaviors that are harmful to ourselves and others. But there are plenty of non-Marxists who talk about alienation, who think the world is terrible and plagued with endless problems. What makes Marxists different, and why I think Marxist theory of alienation has enduring relevancy, is that we see alienation as situated firmly within the social relations of production under capitalism. And I think to understand the essence of Marx's theory of alienation, we need to start with why labor was so crucial to his conception of humanity. Marx conceived human beings' ability to work and create as a fundamental aspect of our nature, something that is life-sustaining, but also a process of joy and enrichment. But with the advent of capitalism, our control over an intimate and important aspect of our lives was removed and turned instead into an instrument of exploitation and oppression. So let me explain a little bit further. Marx rejected the idea of his Enlightenment predecessors that humans have a static, eternal nature. Marx did not outright reject the notion of human nature, but instead look to the material conditions and the makeup of societies as the determining source of human ideas and behavior. What Marx did see as the essential and defining feature found across human societies was our ability to labor consciously, or as he referred, the everlasting nature-imposed condition of human existence. And he called this our species being. Like animals, humans must act upon nature in order to meet our needs and survive. But our ability to consciously and creatively shape the world around us is what differentiates us. So a spider conducts operations that resemble those of a weaver and puts to shame many an architect in the construction of her cells. But what distinguishes the worst architect from the best of these is this, that the architect raises in his structure in imagination before he erects it in reality. So to put it another way, you know, one could transport a spider to a different country or even a different century, and it would still weave the same web because it's acting purely on instinct. Human beings, however, have the capacity to plan and inject dynamism, creativity into what we design and build and invent, which moreover is influenced by our material conditions and the previous labor of other humans. And another aspect of our species being is that humans must labor collectively and collaboratively. One cannot build a bridge or farm food without first, working with others. As Marx put it, society does not consist of individuals. It expresses the sum of connections and relationships in which individuals find themselves. But capitalism has created new ways of organizing work and production. During feudalism, there existed forms of alienation, but the social dynamics of production differed. Serfs and peasants were dominated by feudal lords and the church, but they still maintained some ownership over the land, over the things they produced, and they directly labored to meet their needs. With the advent of capitalism, for the first time, there existed the productive capabilities to produce beyond the immediate subsistent needs of human society. And from this emerged a new kind of class division. There emerged a capitalist class which owned and controlled the means of which owned and controlled the factories, the land, the ports, and so on. So places where production occurs and things and value is created. And conversely, there sprung into existence the working class, the mass of the population forcibly removed from the land they occupied during feudalism, and forced to sell their labor for a wage. And this inevitably changed the way labor was conducted. And it was from this that Marx derived his theory of alienation. Under capitalism, we no longer work to fulfill our human needs, both in the material, physical, but also the inner emotional sense, but instead to earn a wage to survive. And this work is totally far removed from us, and we are given no control or agency in how we labor. And so Marx has developed several ways this alienation from labor, the core of our humanity, manifests and impacts the working class. And I want to first discuss alienation from the process of production, as it was this fundamental reorganization of production and capitalism that Marx saw alienation emerging from. Under capitalism, work has taken on a distinct and separate meaning compared to previous forms of society. Labor itself has become a commodity to be sold on the market. And this necessarily meant that it had to be measured and quantified in order for workers to receive a wage. And so the concept of time also had to change. It's no longer useful to measure time by changes in seasons or the harvesting cycles, but instead to the workday and the needs of capitalist production. So in fact, the popularity of the wristwatch actually grew alongside the development of industrial capitalism. And because workers have nothing to sell but their labor, they must work for a capitalist in order to, you know, buy the things they need to survive. And this means workers are seen as mere commodities on the market to be bought by a boss. And we're increasingly forced to see ourselves and others in this way. Just think of job application processes. We're expected to sell and advertise ourselves to potential employers on our resumes and in interviews to list all the qualities and skills that will make us a good and subservient employee. And anyone who's done it will know it's a super demeaning and demoralizing experience. And while at work, workers are told what to do. We have zero decision-making abilities. Workers have no say over what we produce, how we produce it, what we can wear, when we can clock on and off, and so on. Our labor is controlled by our boss in the strictest ways imaginable to produce a profit for them. And I think workplace injuries are a really apt example of this kind of alienation. Workers are perceived as expendable objects, and so are expected to put their very health and safety on the line to meet the demands of their bosses. So I was watching a video recently on the push to unionize in an Amazon factory in Albany, New York, in the US. At this specific warehouse, workers have been taken to hospital by ambulance more than 100 times in the past 18 months. And employees say that injuries are just a normal everyday occurrence at this factory. And this is because at Amazon, workers are expected to meet really outrageous picking and packing rates, which are determined by an algorithm. Workers at these warehouses, even warehouses here in Australia, report having to lift dangerously heavy items to meet quotas. They regularly have packages fall on them from high places. And generally, they work in really horrid, unsafe factories for shit pay. And in this specific warehouse in Albany, most hospitalizations are caused by dehydration because workers are too scared to drink water and take toilet breaks for fear of not meeting their quotas and being sacked. So these workers' whole days and lives are so restricted and acutely monitored by the likes of Jeff Bezos, their managers, and even, you know, algorithms that track their pace that they can't undertake, you know, essential human functions like drinking water and going to the toilet. And I think Amazon warehouses, you know, they're such, you know, stark and horrifying examples of the exploitation and alienation meted out to workers under capitalism. But this lack of agency and control, especially at the expense of our personal, mental, and physical well-being, is a universal experience faced by, you know, the working class across the world. And another perhaps more insidious aspect of alienation from the labor process is boredom. In order to increase profits, capitalists have divided production into its most basic and efficient segments. Even office work, retail and hospitality can be just as tedious and monotonous as factory and assembly line work. And boredom is bad for us. It leads to stress and burnout, mental health issues. And some studies even show that the chronically bored are at a higher risk of drug addiction, alcoholism, and compulsive gambling. And part of the reason why we experience boredom is that we are limited in our ability to express ourselves creatively and independently in the process of production. Workers must suppress their every desire and every independent thought, almost every creative idea we have 9 to 5, for the majority, for decades of our working lives. And this is such a dehumanizing and unnatural way of organizing society that sees workers alienated from their very selves and being. And as a result, there's a distinction between the work at your job and the activities you do in your free time. Marx wrote, "The result is that man feels he is acting freely only in his animal functions, eating, drinking, procreating, or at most in his dwelling and adornment. Hobbies and leisure activities are seen as unproductive, and things you do in your spare time often as a way to recuperate from your job." And there are, you know, massive industries dedicated to these hobbies and at-home entertainment. Whereas we experience our jobs as burdensome and tiring. So again, I think the tweet I referred to at the start of this talk is useful. It's not quite true that we don't dream of labor. People labor voluntarily in creative and meaningful ways all the time. It's that work under capitalism is oppressive and unfulfilling, which makes us so averse to it. Workers also experience estrangement from the very products they create. In previous societies, the harder one worked and the more they produced corresponded to how much they had to consume. So even under feudalism, a peasant could, for example, simply plant more crops if they wanted a greater harvest yield. However, capitalism has created new ways of organizing production in which workers have no ownership over the goods we produce, instead receiving a fraction of the value we create in the form of a wage from our employer. These new relations had to be violently enforced. In fact, the first iterations of police were created exactly for this purpose. Bands of men were hired on the London docks at the beginning of the 18th century to enforce the capitalist property rights, which were being resisted by the newly created working class, who would regularly pocket tea and sugar from the cargo. For them, it seemed entirely natural that they were entitled to the share of the goods they had spent all day loading and unloading. And Marx argued that this lack of ownership meant products of our labor began to take on an alien and hostile character to the worker. No matter how much harder workers labor, we receive the same hourly rate or yearly salary. And as such, it is clear that the more worker spends himself, the more powerful becomes the alien world of objects, which he creates over and against himself. The poorer he himself, his inner world becomes, the less belongs to him as his own. Moreover, workers are often unable to afford the very goods they produce. Take the Foxconn factory in Shenzhen, China, infamous for having to install suicide nets within its compound. So workers in this factory assemble iPhones, yet they are subjected to shocking working conditions and really terribly low pay. And they will never have the means or opportunity to own the very phones they're making. Thus, workers produce cash crops on the market when they are malnourished, build houses in which they will never live, make cars they can never buy, and produce shoes they cannot afford to wear, and so on. And this is actually an entirely irrational way of organizing society. There exists immense wealth and abundance, but workers have no say in how this wealth and abundance is produced and distributed. So we see things like farmers dumping whole avocado harvests in North Queensland while millions starve every day. We see massive energy shortages and price hikes in the midst of a cost of living crisis, despite there being no actual material shortage of oil and gas here in Australia. Not only are workers stripped of control over these things and processes, but they come to appear as blind economic forces, and the human labor behind them is hidden. And Marx described this concept as commodity fetishism. Under capitalism, the exploitation of workers is concealed. It occurs through a free exchange of commodities on the market. That is, workers are free to sell their labor to a boss, and bosses are free to give that worker a wage in return. And this seemingly free exchange of commodities comes to dominate and shape workers' perception of the world and how we relate to each other. And what Marx meant when he used the term fetishism is that commodities are seen to be imbued with a mystical power or value inherently. Fetishism had a, you know, completely different meaning back in Marx's time. It doesn't, it didn't mean, you know, an obsession with something the way it means today. And as such, the human labor that creates value and commodities is obscured. And it is instead, you know, objects that take on this character. Take, for example, the stock market or global economic growth forecasts. They are seen simply as numbers and lines. They're simply, you know, seen as numbers and lines on a graph that move up and down seemingly in a vacuum. But what they truly represent is real human labor creating value. So, you know, workers in factories and schools and hospitals producing things and creating value, which is, you know, at the core of the capitalist system. And I think this is why Marx's analysis of alienation is so useful. It removes this illusion and places the estrangement and isolation of life within capitalism and gives it a material basis. Alienation is not just some abstract idea or unavoidable condition of human existence. It is the result of the way production is organized in a society in which one class subjugates and oppresses another, and we are stripped of control and agency. And Marx also described capitalism alienating us from our fellow humans. For Marx, the defining feature of human labor wasn't just our conscious capabilities, but it was a social and collective act. Therefore, how labor is organized shapes our social relationships with others. The most obvious form this takes is the alienation between workers and bosses. The working class is dominated and exploited by the ruling class. We have opposing class interests, and this necessarily creates divisions amongst people in society. If the product of labor does not belong to the worker, if it confronts him as an alien power, it is only possible because it belongs to a man other than the worker. And this estrangement extends to other workers. Relationships can often be seen through the lens of capitalist production. We relate to people as customers, co-workers, servers, and so on. And competition and division amongst workers is encouraged. We increasingly see our neighbors, friends, co-workers as competitors for jobs, pay rises, and housing. And this alienation, this total isolation and estrangement from our work, relationships and ourselves is actually why people do bad things. People see themselves as powerless individuals and react in antisocial ways to cope. It's hard to treat others as equals with respect and dignity if you yourself are denied these very qualities by the oppression and exploitation endemic to the system. And this can vary from littering to being rude to your server to the more extreme instances of violence and abuse. And most importantly, alienation muddles our collective class interests as workers and undermines solidarity. So how do we overcome alienation? Well, within capitalism, there are a range of strategies and whole industries dedicated to dealing with alienation, from mindfulness to meditation and yoga to self-care. And I think this is because the capitalists are aware of the effects alienation has upon the working class, but they're far more concerned with how these effects impact their bottom line. So often concerns, and sometimes you'll see articles about this, like about how loneliness and stress and burnout, like they'll talk about this, but they'll emphasize like how much this costs like an industry or the economy instead of, you know, the impact it has on, you know, working class people. And these are band-aid solutions at best, you know, if not outright useless and quite frankly patronizing, because they don't address the root cause of alienation, the social dynamics of production under capitalism. And if we want to rid the world and our lives of alienation, we actually need to reorganize how society and production is run. So we need to smash capitalism, and we need a working class revolution to do so. And Marxists look to the working class for a number of reasons. Firstly, workers do everything, and that's where our power lies. When workers organize and withdraw our labor, capitalism grinds to a halt and the boss's profits dry up. Secondly, the working class are a collective class. Workers labor collectively and can only go forward together. You know, a single worker cannot go out on strike alone. Thirdly, our collective class interests are counterposed to that of the ruling class. When workers win pay rises and better conditions, that's bad for the boss. It eats into their profits. And finally, because workers, because of our position within production, don't have a material interest in upholding a system that exploits and oppresses us. What ordinary working class person would choose to pollute the environment or choose to build bombs and weapons of mass destruction instead of schools and hospitals? And it's actually the experience of struggle and revolution that teaches workers how to build a new society free from capitalism. Marx said, revolution is necessary, therefore, not only because the ruling class cannot be overthrown in any other way, but also because the class overthrowing it can only in a revolution succeed in ridding itself of all the muck of ages and become fitted to found society anew. Revolutions upend the status quo. Old beliefs and prejudices are swept away as workers begin to see their collective class interests and the immense power they have. They create new organizations of workers' power capable of running society based on human need, not profit. So in Russia, these were called Soviets. In Chile, they were called cordones. And in Iran, they were called shuras. And I really recommend people attend the session on Iran later today. And I think revolutions also offer a glimpse into what society could look like free from exploitation, oppression, and alienation. Social revolutions are transformative liberatory events in which workers question the structures and institutions that oppress them. They see their potential to have meaningful control and say over society. The Russian socialist revolutionary Leon Trotsky wrote, "The history of a revolution is for us, first of all, a history of the forceful entrance of the masses into the realm of rulership over their own destiny." And so one of my favorite anecdotes from a revolution is something that happened in Egypt during the Arab Spring, which was a series of revolutions in the Middle East and North Africa, which toppled decades old regimes and dictatorships in 2011. Workers in Egypt organized voluntary cleaning bands to keep Tahrir Square, which was the center of revolutionary organizing in the country, clean and functioning. And this is just like a very small example of the kind of wonderful and innovative ways workers were organizing in the Arab Revolution. But I think it's, you know, such a wonderful example of how people would relate to each other and the world if they feel they had a stake in it, that it belongs to them. And they aren't just, you know, voiceless, insignificant cogs stuck in a machine. So hearing this, you might be thinking, well, international working class revolution doesn't seem to be on the cards right now. And in fact, the world is in a dire state. Workers everywhere are facing the squeeze of stagnating wages and skyrocketing inflation. And we're facing multiple existential threats in the form of the climate crisis and a potential hot war between the US and China. And all this is compounding the drudgery and alienation of our everyday lives. But I think the closest thing you can come to overcoming alienation within capitalism is to be a socialist. Firstly, because theoretical clarity is an important tool in the face of our fucked up world. Socialists know that it's the system that's shit, not people. We can see through the lies that the bosses feed us or try to encourage. And secondly, socialist politics gives us a strategy for how to defeat capitalism and the exploitation and misery it entails, which means there's always hope. And thirdly, because fighting back and resisting in the here and now is about standing up and asserting our rights and humanity in this fuck system. It's about refusing every day to be a cog in a machine, refusing to succumb to the powerlessness and individualism of alienation. So I want to end my talk with an argument to everyone here. If you hate capitalism, if you think it's a sick system plagued by poverty and war and alienation, then you should join the fight against it whenever and wherever that occurs. And you should seriously consider getting involved with Socialist Alternative and our project of building a revolutionary socialist organization capable of smashing capitalism once and for all. Thank you.